You're listening to a fresh new podcast from the owner of the celebrity acclaimed Raw Republic Juice Bar and Wellness Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, Sheena Menina. Yes, that's her real name. This is Raw Talk with Sheena.
I'm very curious to hear your perspective about, like, you're so deep in, do you just like formally say that you're in epigenetics as a...
I would say genetics more than epigenetics. And we can kind of touch on that as well. The difference between the two. You know,
okay,
I think
let's keep it very basic.
Yeah.
I always
have to put a limiter on my brain. So
yes, please do. Epigenetics versus genetics. Let's see.
Yeah. You know, nowadays a lot of people talk about epigenetics. You know, you do the right things, the right genes are turned on. You do the wrong things, the wrong genes are turned on. But who's the one switching the genes on and off? It's proteins that are made by genes. So, like, you heard of the MTHFR gene before?
Yes, that's the one I've been tested and I have a couple of SNPs on.
I'd say 95% of my clients have at least one SNP. So it's not that rare by any means. People act like it's the end all be all. Nowadays, social media, people are like, that's the one you got to check. That's the end all be all. If it was that easy, I could throw everyone methylfolate and cure the world. It's not that easy. But that's just one of many genes in the methylation cycle. So, you know, whether it's chronic illness or childhood trauma, you know, that's an epigenetic phenomenon. Like, you get sick. Now, again, if your methylation genes, if those genetics are messed up, the genetics dictate your epigenetic capabilities. So the nature dictates the level of the nurture.
Sure. Okay. So the preface epi means what?
I'm not sure what the epi in epigenetics means, honestly. I just know. I think, what is epi? Let me see. Epi. I think epi might be above.
Above.
On top of. So top it's Greek for on top of. So the genetic code is what's hardwired, you know, and that will tell you, for example, no matter how much of our MTHFR genes we express, you said you have a mutation, I have two mutations. It will always be hardwired to not work as well. Now, you can make more of it, which will help compensate. You know what I mean? But depending how many MTHFR mutations you have, if you have one and it works 80% as well, not as huge of a deal. So epigenetically, you could be able to make enough to compensate. But if you have certain mutations, it works 20% as well. This is where, you know, that epigenetic machinery is really, really messed up. So I'm definitely more on the genetic side of things. And again, people act like the people that say epigenetics are what matters and, you know, you can't do anything about your genes, they're always people with no molecular biology or genetics background. There's a reason why there's peer-reviewed studies on thousands of studies, hundreds of thousands of studies about you have X gene in tens of thousands of people, it's like to an increased risk of X or Y disease. Now, of course, other factors come into play. You know, it's not like it's just the genes. I'll never be that charlatan, extremist, absolutist scientist that are so much on social media nowadays saying that genetics are all that matters. But even let's think about mold, for example. People would think that mold is an environmental thing, not genetic. Well, then tell me why a family of five live in a moldy house. Two of them are extremely sick. Three of them are fine. If all that matters is the mold, the exposure levels, then that shouldn't happen.
Well, but it's interesting that you're distilling it down to a genetic problem, because if we're using the example of a family, then there is a lot of crossover for genetics. But there may not be a lot of crossover in what they eat or their activity level or, right?
Yes. So yes, and I'm not saying it's solely genetics. My point being that what dictates how sensitive you are to mold or how well you detox heavy metals? A big factor of that is, for example, the metallothionein protein. That is your number one heavy metal detoxification protein. What do you know that can be mutated to not work as well? So you see what I'm saying? It's a mixture of both always, of course. But my point that I'm trying to say is, I believe that most of the people that are getting really bad heavy metal issues, or most of the people getting really bad mold issues. I think it's at least 51% genetic, 49% exposure levels. Now, of course, there's outliers in every instance, but your genetics, once again, are sensitizing you to specific environmental non-genetic factors. So this is why when I work with people and I see you're more likely for mercury toxicity, we work together. The rate of improvement, is it to the normal rate I'm used to seeing? They eat a lot of seafood. They go to my heavy metal guy and it comes back really, really high. Or sometimes they're not even eating a lot of seafood. Now, of course, you have things like birth control can affect estrogen, can affect candida growth, which can affect heavy metals. You know, I'm not disputing that. I'm also just shining the light on an entirely new way of thinking and perspective that no one's shining the light on. You know, think about the number of holistic genetic health coaches versus mold coaches or heavy metal coaches or spiritual mindset coaches. You know, it's not that one is inherently drastically more important than the other. It's just a new perspective, a new slice of the pie that I personally seen completely change people's lives within weeks after being failed by dozens of conventional, holistic, energetic workers. And of course, I'm not going to say that every client is a miracle improvement in a week. You know what I mean? Like it's a variance, because it all depends on if you have the pie chart that is total health. You obviously have diet, you have stress, you have relationships, you know, you have genetics, you have environmental toxin exposure levels. So they're all parts of the pie. My job is to take the piece of the pie that is genetics, leave no stone unturned. And a lot of people may say, a lot of people think, do what you can, get genetics if you're stuck. I like to think you can save magnitudes more money and time by getting crystal clear on what works for you. Rather than trying all the diets, all the parasite cleanses, all these things, spending tens of thousands of dollars in functional labs chasing the boogeyman that could turn up nothing, why not spend much less than that on a genetic test, work with an expert and figure out, okay, your liver's sluggish because you have 10 mutations in making phosphatidylcholine. That's directly linked to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I ask clients when they have that mutation, or based on 600,000 mutations, you're at a higher risk for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which includes those genes. I ask them, do you have any pain in your upright abdomen? I swear to you, at least 7 out of 10 times they say, yes, that happened to me today. I'm like, well, what do you know? That could be an early sign of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So again, rather than taking a random blend of herbs for the liver, they can help the liver. But another thing I'm vocal about is these supplements do other things in the body. A lot of these herbs, they also slow down the breakdown of adrenaline. They make people anxious. They're iron and copper chelators. So they pull these things out of people's bodies. That doesn't mean it's bad for everybody. But if I have data saying your liver barely makes phosphatidylcholine, and we know that it's critical for detoxification, you see, we could cut right to the chase and give you that. And then boom, people will start detoxing like crazy. I've had people pass parasites right away or these biotoxins, because now that can be the missing piece. Now, of course, if you have one or two mutations, I may recommend it. But if you have 10, like one of my clients did today, I'm like, oh my God, like you need to be like drinking that body bio PC phosphatidylcholine support, because the more you have, they're additive on top of each other.
This is going to be a very obvious question to you. Well, I mean, a basic question. How many genes do we have?
Oh, wow. I should look that up. I should know that off the top of my head. I'm looking that up. I feel embarrassed now, but let's see.
Well, how many do you look at?
So the platform
generally.
The platform I use looks at 83 million mutations. But
what?
Here's the thing. We have data on what all of them are, what the spelling is of the gene. We don't know what 90%+ of them do. Just because you know if there's a T or an A there, it needs to be studied. Not every mutation actually changes. So for you guys listening, the genes, they're instructions on how to make proteins. So the MTHFR gene makes the MTHFR protein. That's what activates folate. So that gene is the instructions to make the protein. Not every misspelling of the gene actually changes how the protein functions.
Misspelling meaning mutation?
Yes. So instead of having the letter A, it's the letter G.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four letters for the DNA, A, T, C, and G. So most people should have an A here. Well, it turns out if you have a C here, you're 9 times more likely to commit suicide. And what do you know? That gene helps you make serotonin. They do studies. Clearly, it's making that work not as well. But not every mutation, not every misspelling actually changes how that protein functions.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying.
Just sorry to interrupt. Do we then just jump the gun and then like supplement serotonin? Because then we're sort of just like needing a puzzle piece of a supplement for every human being to function optimally.
Well, that's exactly what I do. But here's the thing too. What can lead to low serotonin? That mutation that I mentioned can. MTHFR mutations can. Low vitamin D can, which can be linked to maybe you don't make as much from sunlight in your skin. Maybe you don't transport it as well in your body. Maybe you don't convert it to the active form as well. Maybe your cells can't sense vitamin D as well. So this is what
I'm saying.
Maybe
you don't go outside?
Well, that as well. But even if you go outside, I'm hardwired to not make enough vitamin D from sunlight. I'll be at the beach all day, every day, and my vitamin D won't be where it needs to be. Hardwired due to my mutation.
And how do you know that? So you're constantly testing your vitamin D?
No, this was years ago. I was in poor health many years ago. Middle of the summer, you know, should be feeling great. Yeah. I had low vitamin D levels. Now I know this was – then I went down the genetics rabbit hole, found out about these mutations. But you see what I'm saying? There's a – and then also inflammation can lower serotonin, you know? So it's not like it's only the genetics. But again, if I see someone with 6 mutations in that serotonin gene, these are the people – I don't care how much cold plunges you do, how much sunlight you get, how much you meditate. Certain individuals, the cellular dysfunction is so drastic. They're the ones that have been on meds their whole life. They barely work. And you give them something like a tryptophan or a 5-HTP, the immediate precursor, and it changes their life overnight. Or again, it could be more moderate spread across multiple things. My job is to try to find the least number of supplements that can address the highest number of high impact pathways. Because again, I mentioned a bunch of different steps for vitamin D. Now, I look at the pathway sides of things. Like, I don't think in terms of depression, bloating, psoriasis. Of course, I take them in the onboarding form, but what's linked to all of those? Low vitamin D. Low vitamin D, poor methylation, low glutathione, low nitric oxide, high histamine are linked to the vast majority of symptoms and diseases. The quadrillion, infinitely valued dollar question is, why do some people get certain ailments versus others, even though a lot of these pathways, you see what I'm saying? Rather than thinking in terms of each individual organ, all of our cells have the same genes. They may express them a little differently, but the same genes, they all get the same nutrient supply from our blood. So again, I'm looking behind the iron curtain. We got to dial up this pathway that's genetically sluggish, and then we got to bring this one down. And that's what I'm doing with all these nutraceuticals. That's custom tailored to you. Like, I don't have an anxiety protocol. People ask me, what should I take for my panic attacks? I don't have that. I have a you protocol because what might help you might harm somebody else. That's why I don't do a lot of general recommendations. That's why I don't have a supplement line. I probably should eventually, but knowing what I know, what, I'm going to make a supplement line and advertise how you shouldn't take it if you're this, this, or that person. Like,
right.
Like I'm too much of an honest guy like that. Like, yeah. I couldn't. So, but it's like, I'm not going to do that and just shoot myself in the foot. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. So gosh, this has my brain going in so many different directions. I love that you're so knowledgeable about this method of thinking, because this is how we get good at things, is we get people who are just like totally obsessed and just, wow. So I'm curious. Like, did you experience a big shift through your understanding of your genetics that changed your health, or the like something noticeable in your life when you start playing with this personally?
It changed my life. That's what got me into this initially. You know, I got the 23andMe done. I had a lot of anxiety, brain fog, lethargy, and insomnia issues. Looked at my genes. The reports said, like, this is old 23andMe, but way back in the day, it was like more likely to think cilantro tastes like soap, more likely for your pee to smell like asparagus if you eat it. And I think like more likely to be musically talented or something. And it's like, cool, sure. But like, how is that really going to change my life? So me, this is while I was doing my PhD, so I knew I could reverse engineer it. I was looking into the raw data and I found out I have a mutation in the COMT gene. That means I have two mutations there. So double, which maybe I'd say 10% of my clients have a double. I'd say around 75% have one mutation there. This means I break down adrenaline and dopamine four times slower than a normal person. So this means when I'm not stressed, more alert, it can be linked to higher IQ. It can be linked to more excitable. Like if I know I'm doing something fun that weekend with you, I'm going to be jazzed up all week. Like I am just brimming with excitement. I'm a very intense personality. Like the highs are high. The downside is that when I get stressed and triggered, fight or flight turns on. I dump adrenaline. Imagine you dump a bunch of adrenaline into a bathtub and you clog the drain. It can't drain as quickly. So this is also highly linked to anxiety. It's linked to insomnia. It's linked to an increased startle response. Like I can't watch scary movies. I give my wife bloody noses because I jolt watching. She doesn't like them either, thank God. But like that startle response. And for you guys listening, an easy way I think to tell, this has a big impact on behavior as well. I can usually tell right when I start talking to somebody if I think they have a double mutation like I do, because it's one of those like very high energy, like we keep upping the ante of just getting more and more excited as the conversation goes on. But if you find yourself getting stressed, and a lot of people do a lot of inner work to try and work on this, like even me nowadays, I'll get stressed. I'll tell myself consciously, all right, you're fine. This is going to pass. I'm good. Let's move on. My body's like, oh no, you fucking don't. You got to suffer for another like 4 or 5 more hours. Because even though mentally I'm over it, the adrenaline is still flying through my bloodstream. It's making my heart beat faster. It's making so that stress lingers. A lot of the physical symptoms can linger there as well. That's one of the main ways people can help identify without getting the genetic test done. But when I found that out, I was like, holy shit, that gene, that protein doesn't work as well for the rest of my life. What does it need to function optimally? It uses magnesium and it uses something called SAMe that's involved in the methylation process. So I tried both of those and they changed my life. Like literally overnight, I was like, wow, this is like a massive, massive difference in my perceived reality. And now you see what I'm saying. It's like, if here's the dotted line, the enzyme will only work this well. It'll never go beyond that. But if you're lacking the cofactors, so imagine if it works half as well. If you're not, if you don't have enough magnesium or SAMe, it may work half as well from that. So you're at 25%. But if you give enough, you could get up to 50% total. But you see what I'm saying, to optimize it, I'll never exceed what that genetic limit is at, but I could give it the best fighting chance. And now this is where my approach is different. You stem out from that. Oh, well, what about the gene that makes SAMe? So what if you have a mutation in the gene that makes SAMe, and then you have a mutation in one of the genes that uses SAMe? So you see how I call it building the Lego set. And this is one of the main differentiators I've seen. It's not just, oh, I have an MTHFR mutation. Who cares? What about all the other interacting genes? Mm-hmm. So that was a huge, huge shift for me. And then also realizing a lot of my histamine issues were a lot of my brain fog. Turns out I was eating a lot of foods I was allergic to. All I got was brain fog. None of the allergists wanted to test me. They told me I didn't have allergies, gaslighting me. And I was severely allergic to mice. I worked with them pretty much every day for 6 years in my PhD.
Oh my gosh.
I wish I sneezed.
Lucky you, right?
I wish I got the external symptoms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But guess what? That gene, that's called the HNMT gene. That gene that breaks down histamine in my joints, in my skin, in my brain, that doesn't work as well. Guess what? That also uses SAMe to function better. So you see how if I see these mutations, I'm like, SAMe could really help you immensely. I may not recommend it right away, but you have tools in the toolkit for people. So those are the main things that right – that and then the vitamin D thing for me. I need it during the summer as well. That was kind of the initial catalyst for me, like, holy shit. Can other people feel this much better from this type of approach? And then I started doing it for years, you know, on the side, just friends and family. Like very archaic control searching raw data, like, you know, and then that was the brainchild of what I call now holistic genetic health optimization. That was probably 6 or so years ago at this point.
So, you know, this also brings up for me the question of our evolution, because we talk a lot about MTHFR when we're, you know, looking at the body functionally, when we're looking at the body physiologically, and, you know, tongue ties and things like that, things that like are physically more apt in people with those mutations. And the conversation goes to a place that is like, you know, those children maybe perhaps wouldn't have survived because they wouldn't have been able to breastfeed. And we're snipping their tongues and we're making it easier. We obviously have formula now. We have so many things that increase
the natural selection has been dead for a long time with Homo sapiens. It's not coming back.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say, okay, so that's a good thing to have in mind. Okay. So natural selection is dead because we have so many adaptations that will continue us as a species far beyond probably our biology. So we're moving, right? And do you kind of see that? Like, we're sort of, in a way, you use AI because you're using the intelligence of everything that we've accumulated thus far as a species at your fingertips to manipulate mm-hmm. a biological structure. So if we continue doing that, you know, is there a downside? Like, I always think about this, and I think, like, I'm a trader. If I find like a leg up or a way to optimize or improve that's not like the natural way, because I come from this like natural perspective.
Yeah.
But my curiosity always brings me to the place of optimization. So I'm like so curious about
what would you consider. What would you consider more natural though? Like, you could also make the argument that
right, exactly is it
you could also make, you could also make the argument that wouldn't it be moving more towards natural for you to correct genetic deficiencies, because, you know, I guess that is what nature intended to some degree, you know what I mean? But you see what I'm saying? It's like, if that 10x mutation on a gene, is that really natural? It came from nature, but at the same point, we're already like interbreeding between globally as well. You know, that's a whole other can of worms that, you know, evolutionarily, you wouldn't be a globalized species like this mating with all these different ethnicities that genetically drifted apart. So
really,
where do we
draw
the line of what's natural and what isn't? You know what I mean? Great question.
You're right. It's actually, you know, it's a mute point, because we're not going backwards. Nope. So how do we move forward in a way that, you know, respects the nature of our being and our consciousness, while also bringing us to a place of, you know, like, while also bringing us of a place to be like that conscious, healthy being that can improve the world? I mean,
and I like to think of two. I like to think of the perspective of doing this, and this is why I'm so loud and proud about my mission. I'm not going to stop. This can just end so much unnecessary suffering in the world, you know? And of course, you know, people could say not natural, that, you know what I mean? Like, I get all that, you know, but at the same point, I view it as there are people on this earth today. And of course, at the end of the day too, the real issue with all these diseases, it's not really the genetics. The genetics are outpaced by our toxic modern world. You know what I mean? But at the same point, a lot of people don't understand this. Hundreds of millions of years ago was the first documented case of cancer in mammals. So our ancient ancestors, before we were even Homo sapiens, they were getting autoimmune diseases. So that, I think, though, was a lot more of like, you know, imagine like a side branch of certain genetic mutations, like, didn't work. You know what I mean? So not going to get passed on. You see what I'm saying? People try. I debated people about like gluten. I don't think anyone should be eating gluten. I know studies can say there's not an increased risk for this or that or whatever, but gluten can do a lot of things other than inflame your body that I don't think we were evolved to eat it. I mean, I have it occasionally. I don't recommend it. Certain mutations can make you more prone to inflammation from it. But at the same point, people are like, oh, well, we ate a lot of gluten back in the day. I'm like, yes, the gluten wasn't hybridized. There wasn't much glyphosate. I see all these perspectives. But at the same point, if you were sensitive to gluten that long ago, you weren't complaining about brain fog in the 1700s. You were living to survive.
Right.
If someone had multiple sclerosis, they'd probably say, oh, they have the shakes or so. You know what I mean? There was no like diagnosis back then.
Yeah.
So how do you know that it wasn't affecting these things? And
okay, so what you're saying is we have to still have a super keen eye on the toxins that we're
in. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that's the real reason for the increase in autoimmune diseases. And you see the past few decades, everything's spiking up. That's not – our genes haven't changed that much in like 100,000 years. But at the same point, like you said – I don't know if you said this, but there's not much we could do about our environment anymore. There's pesticides in the air we breathe. There's heavy metals in the air we breathe. You can buy organic, sure, but it may be wrapped in plastic. So it's like there's only so much we could do about that. But again, if we figure out the gene that helps you break down X doesn't work as well and it needs Y in order to function better, let's make sure you get Y. Let's make sure you limit your exposure to these things. If you're hardwired to accumulate higher amounts of mercury, you should be very careful with how much fish you eat, regardless of whether it's farm raised or not, because our oceans have heavy metals as well.
How do you, okay, I'm always devil's advocate.
I love that.
Why? Okay, you're looking at a huge ass puzzle. You said 83 million genes, right? Mutations. 83 million gene mutations
that are assessed. Yeah, I mean, I'm not manly looking through all those, but yeah. That's what's assessed.
Assessed. Yes. I would say in general, what could you say in general, like the amount of like mutations that you understand the implications of?
50? That's a really good question.
100?
No, more than that. More than that. I would say at least in the several hundred, maybe in the thousand range, perhaps. That's a good question because each gene can be mutated in 30,000 areas. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, individual mutations. Yeah, I'd probably say individual mutations that I know the functional consequence. I'd say probably in the 300 to 500 range.
Okay. And not you. I mean, because you have access to these tools that are holding this information, correct?
Well, no, these are ones that I'm familiar with that I've like seen, that I've like worked with. Like, yeah,
300 to 500.
I could take a quick look at something and be like, yep. Because it's just going to say, I could read something. This gene mutation makes it work better or worse. Boom. Now I know what it does. You know what I mean? So the acquisition of that knowledge is very quick. But again, it's a volume game. And again, I can only invest so much time into one client for a deep dive report. Because Where do you draw the line? People want to know more, more, more. And it's like, listen, I could talk to you for 10 hours about all the genes and give you 300 supplement recommendations and bill you for all that time. Or I could trim it down to bare bones, the most bang for your buck, in my expert opinion, in an hour. Give you maybe 30 recommendations. We would never, ever put you on all of those. Those are just options down the road. Pick a few of them. And if I get you the same results in that, that's a win-win all around.
Yeah. Well, if you're Brian Johnson, for example, you actually spend all the time looking into every single one. But my question is, because you know that you're looking at a picture with a lot of missing pieces.
Yes.
So how are you so confident to know that, you know, supplementing with X is not going to affect the Y that you can't see?
Just working with several hundred people over the past year and a half. And I always – that's a very good point you bring up. Genetics will always be an imperfect – like all science is imperfect science more or less. You know, it's always a conquest for more knowledge. In our lifetimes, we're not going to figure all of it out. Maybe several generations from now. But that's why I always, always, always go by how the client's feeling first and foremost. You know, the genetics line up a eerily, spookishly high amount of the time, like magic almost. But of course, sometimes we'll say, all right, these five mutations point to this pathway. Let's support it. They're like, I feel horrible. I'll usually say give it another day or so. Maybe you're normalized. Day two, day three, I still feel horrible. Okay, we pull it out. You know, and I have the humility to say, okay, based on the data, there may be data we don't know about that could be masking. Maybe it wasn't the right thing for you. So that's why that's also why my business model right now, I don't just give you a report. We have to have an hour-long call. I need to talk to you because you can tell me you have mental health issues. I look at all the mental health mutations And I could just give you those recommendations. But I need to talk to you because if you're anxious and depressed, a lot of people come to me with that. Are you waking up in a panic? I have so mm-hmm. much work to do today. You're mm-hmm. freaking out. And then you're burnt out and depressed at the end of the day. Or are you slow to get out of bed? You're like, oh, life sucks. Low mood. You can't get anything done. And then at the end of the day, you're like, shit, I got nothing done again today. Life sucks. Do you see how people can have basically the same mutations? But that subtle difference there will dictate what I pull out of, again, the list that's customized to your genes, but which couple I implement for you. So this is why I call what I do hyper-personalized, because I need to talk to you. I need to hear about, and this is through practice hearing, when people say certain things, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like more of a GABA neurotransmitter issue, and they might have mutations there. So that's a great point you raise. You know, I'm just confident. And this is why, honestly, a year and a half ago and change when I first started this, I was charging like $100 and the reports were next to nothing compared to now. But I was like nervous in the beginning because up until then, it was all friends and family, people I knew, people that were biased that may say, oh, I feel better. You know, like my mom's not going to tell me, oh, you didn't help me. Right. So when I first started doing this, and this is why I was also working full time as a genetic analyst for a clinical genomics company. So I had a full-time job in genetics, but I was a little worried, you know, like I'm very confident. I saw it help people. It makes sense on paper. How well will this translate to people that A, don't know me, and B, have some money on the line?
Right.
So once I did that, started working, I'm seeing more people, I'm learning more, looking at more genes, taking me more time to do stuff. And I was purposely undervaluing the shit out of what I was delivering because it's a new approach to doing it. I'm a nobody in this space right now, you know? But after seeing hundreds and hundreds of people, all myself, because I'm different than these other genetic companies. They're made by business people that then hire a science team. I'm literally the boots on the ground scientist, like on the front lines, seeing hundreds. Like I'm working to not have as many one-on-ones. I love them, but they can be a lot. But I never want to fully remove myself from that because, again, like you said, if I'm being that innovative, how do I really know what's going to work and what doesn't? But all I've been doing the past year, really, I haven't learned that much. I've stopped learning because I'm working, because I'm seeing. So this is why I'm excited to be able to build a team, train some people so I can start devoting hours each week to just learning. The sky is the absolute limit. I want to be mapping every single hormone conversion pathway. Your progesterone receptor doesn't work. So you need more, like every little step of these hormones, of all these autoimmunity, all these dots to connect I see, but it's really dense work, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't sit down for 20 minutes, get into a flow with that when I have clients, you know, this and that. But at the same point, I love what I do. And I do need to keep seeing people to make sure, is this working? Is this not?
Yeah.
Even though the genes say it, because again, it's always about how the client feels.
This does bring about a convergence to, we were discussing our mutual friend Amberly and her work, like metaphysics and kind of the background that I had devoted some time to previously, because what I hear you saying is essentially that you can look at someone and understand the energetic implication of who they are and make recommendations that will shift their life. But there are a couple of things involved in that. A, the person who signed up to work with you has some sort of curiosity about your work and already has a belief system in place that, like, this is going to support me and help me. And then
it's huge. Absolutely. You can think yourself into sickness or out of sickness. That's been proven. Absolutely.
Totally. And then you, on the other hand, like what you're saying, you're gaining confidence in this realm by seeing patterning, by working one-on-one with clients, and now you're able to basically use your avenue, genetics, to bridge the gap between like this person in their current state and where they want to be. And it's just that like your method is genetics and supplementation, you know, and these are things that Amberly and I have talked about in the past, because you could also then probably use other things to achieve that result. And like, you know, in this metaphysical world, you would like maybe just use sound or your consciousness to create that change.
I think to some degree, you know, just like how we mentioned, because what you're talking about is epigenetic change, whether it's energetic, whatever it is, because that's what's eliciting that energetic shift is what's eliciting changes in the gene expression, which is changing your health status. And I still think, you know, again, you may be able to do these things for, you know, a lower number of mutations, but certain roadblocks, I firmly believe that this person will never. And again, I'm not saying this is all my clients by any means. Some people, it's more so moderate numbers scattered around many things. But then the people I see, and I wouldn't say I'm happy to see people with a lot of mutations, but I kind of am, because I'm not glad they have them. But if I see you have, if I see a new record for the number of mutations on a gene, I'm like, fuck yes, this person's life is going to be changed. Because you see what I'm saying? That's more of a roadblock for them. But here's the thing too. I'm a full believer of all these different modalities. And, you know, I'm deeply spiritual, and the mind is incredibly, incredibly powerful. And I wish I could clone myself, because, you know, like what's happening on the cellular level when you're manifesting something, you know, when you're in the flow state, what's literally happening there? You know, we know our genetics make us more prone to childhood trauma. And again, it's like, you can.
Why would a genetic blueprint make you more prone to trauma?
So many different things. So A, that gene I mentioned that makes me anxious, startle response. Think about it. If you're a kid and you break down adrenaline slow and some traumatic event happens, think how much more scared you're going to be. How much more is that going to imprint you epigenetically? Boom. And then once that trauma occurs, that same gene gets epigenetically silenced. So what's very interesting, I found this out. Most of the genes that make you more at risk for childhood trauma, they're the same genes that get even more fucked up from childhood trauma. So you're probably familiar with hypervigilance, one of the main symptoms. So hypervigilance, you're always looking for threats. Hypervigilance, high adrenaline. So take someone like me with genetically high adrenaline, traumatize them. Then they break down adrenaline even slower epigenetically. That leads to hypervigilance all throughout their life. So genes that are associated with the shock effect, you know, and that can be more for the big T trauma, you know, more like the one time massive, massive event. And then you also have genes associated with neurogenesis. So brain cell growth. That can mean that gene gets silenced. So that's why you've heard people get frozen at that stage of development, that part of their brain from the trauma. They never fully mature and learn emotional regulation in these things because their brain is frozen from when they were 4 years old, that part of the brain. Why is it frozen? It's frozen because the gene that helps grow brain cells gets epigenetically silenced. But you see in that gene itself though, can be hard. I have that mutation. It's like, when I started supporting that, a lot of my anxiety got a lot better. That gene can already be mutated to already start you at lower levels of it. So you see what I'm saying? If your brain's already hardwired to be less neuroplastic, you're going to be more prone to that on top of the startle effect. So those are just kind of two aspects there. And again, if you put yourself in someone's shoes going through that trauma, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And but then again, we come back to that methylation stuff I mentioned. Somatic healing, sound healing. I'm a firm believer in all these things. I'm deeply musical. I think sound is merely frequencies and tools to alter our cell biology, point blank.
Yes.
That's all it is, without a doubt. I want to incorporate sound in my practice somehow eventually. I think it's incredibly, incredibly powerful. But again, whether you're doing sound healing or somatic work or talk therapy, don't you want to make sure – epigenetics, you know, you have to switch those genes back off. That's what, you know, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, healing is flipping off the traumatic set of genes and getting it back to how it was. Okay. So you can break down more adrenaline. So you're not as hypervigilant and wound up all the time. So your cortisol isn't so high all the time. So
that's like maybe an experience that someone might have with like an like a mushroom experience or ketamine or something like that. Like, and they might have that.
Every single one of those psychedelics, they all skyrocket BDNF. So that's why I'll see people with BDNF mutations. And, you know, some people ask me now, they're like, what do you think about a microdose? What do you think about a ketamine therapy? I've been thinking about it. I've had this depression. I'm like, listen, we can raise BDNF through things like lithium, magnesium, CBD. There's a lot of things that do it. Let's try these things first. But I do think that makes sense for you. But again, if the job of therapy and everything and healing, inner healing, is to undo the epigenetic changes,
you still isn't have it a to no-brainer? Support that.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is what I'm saying. My business model for the future is not so much to flesh out my internal business. I want to offer individual. Imagine I could get a mental health panel, methylation panel for psychiatrists and somatic healers. This is why people could talk about all their issues, but nothing changes, because the epigenetics don't actually change. They're intellectualizing things. So that's why I'm more interested in outsourcing this information, tidbits. They could grab what they don't have to do a full deep dive. They could grab methylation and neurotransmitters, combine those together. And again, stack the cards in your favor. Imagine if the guys that flip the switches for the genes, if they're working properly, then you start doing therapy. Then you do somatic therapies. Then you do the ayahuasca. I think combining them together, clearly people heal without my approach. I'm not disputing that. And people heal using just my approach without. Exactly. They may not stick, but imagine combining these modalities together. That's where the real magic lies. I mean, I'm changing people's lives by just giving them a handful of natural supplements, and they're getting life-changing effects. I'm fully aware that that's like dipping a toe into all the modalities. I'm just keep pulling the thread. I'm helping people. They refer people. They come to me. But the end game for me is not to just stay where I'm at now. It's to educate and implement this, whether you're a nutritionist. I can let you know what food you may be sensitive to. You know, the sky's the limit just to personalize. It'll make every other practitioner's job easier. And more importantly, it'll make the patient outcome better and likely more rapid. And that's really what we're after here.
So with each of these mutations, you're distilling that information into like most optimal foods, supplements, nutrients, things that are missing. Like you're putting all that lifestyle into this summary. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think another thing that separates me, my background in pharmacology lets me understand how supplements work better than anybody else. If you think about it, like, you don't go to your neurologist for nutrition advice and vice versa. And to me, from my point of view, let me tell you, I see people fucked up on the wrong supplements every single day in my practice. Why are these practitioners that have no training in supplements allowed to recommend supplements? You know, I think anybody should be able to walk in a vitamin shop and buy whatever supplements they want for themselves. No restrictions. Your body, your choice, across the board. That's my personal stance. But once you're an expert making health advice for someone else based on your expertise, shouldn't there be some level of education? It's literally the fucking Wild West out there. And my background in pharmacology, I know how supplements work better than anybody else. That's literally what I dedicated 6 years of my life to. And that herb may help with inflammation, but it might, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, it could do some other thing. Like, for example, I like to give the example of curcumin. You've heard of curcumin or turmeric?
Turmeric, sure.
Listed everywhere as, you know, gut health, brain health, antioxidant support. Great. What else does it do? Very powerful iron chelator. So I've worked with usually women more so on the anemic side, hair falling out, severe anemia, iron infusions, eating iron. No one knows what's going on. And I look and I'm like, you idiots, you're on. And of course, you know, it's always the double doozy, max strength, boozy, extra bougie, liposomal curcumin, like five times a day for your gut infection. And I'm like, what the literal fuck? We remove that. Everything comes back.
Yeah.
They don't even need all the infusions. And I'm like, how do these people not know this? It doesn't say it on the bottle. You have to know how to read an actual scientific study to understand that. So my reports also say –
but it's also not always like A plus B. It's like – it's not always A plus B equals C, because they have all these other things that they're doing that are likely not supporting their foundation of genetics either.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm just saying regarding the supplement side of stuff, I see that all the time. Another example I like to give is glutathione. Glutathione or N-acetylcysteine.
Yeah.
Number one antioxidant. Great. Very high in sulfur. A lot of people are sulfur sensitive. Most people I work with, they're like, I felt horrible on that. The doctor kept upping the dose. They told me I was detoxing. I felt even worse. And I'm like, you're overloading them with more and more sulfur, which causes a histamine response. I've had people that their skin peels off from a glutathione IV for like 2 weeks because they just got IV with glutathione. And I'm like, I could have told you you were sulfur sensitive. Now, I'm not saying that's everybody. There are clinical trials, but I don't really look at clinical trials because I don't look at random batches of people.
Right.
I work on an individual basis, which is going to help you the most. So I also add in what the contraindications are, what foods and supplements you should be avoiding. And that's equally as important. I've changed people's lives just by getting them off of literally 8 supplements they're on that raise adrenaline. And imagine you're like me, you break that adrenaline slow. But guess what all the bottles say? Longevity, you know, all these great things, anti-aging, all these things. And they do that. They also raise adrenaline. So I also put emphasis on what stuff you should be wary of. And I'm going to give you a list. I'm not going to tell you never touch any of these ever. It's all about conscious, intentional interaction with our external world through food, through supplements. And a lot of times now, I don't even necessarily have to look at genetics. Like if I know you're anxious, I don't need to know the exact pathway. I know what supplements raise adrenaline. And no matter who you are, more adrenaline is not going to make your anxiety better. So you can also give like this 12-week holistic genetic health mastery course that I'm running right now. Not everyone in there is deep into genetics. They want to learn a bit about it. A lot of it is patterns. Oh, I have brain fog during the day. What do you eat? Oh, what do you know? That's high in sulfur. Very high sulfur breakfast and lunch. Try taking some molybdenum. Oh, what do you know? I feel great today. What was that? Oh, molybdenum helps your gene that breaks down sulfur work better. It's a cofactor. So I could look at the genes and say that has 5 mutations. It doesn't work as well. You need more molybdenum. Or I could just say, try that out. $10 bottle. And you see, you read between the lines. If taking a supplement that helps you break down sulfur makes you feel better, you have too much sulfur.
But this is too much mind work for someone like you. I wouldn't be able to, you know, just I see that like you're, I'm sure that like actually you probably look at optimizing every meal and like you're probably so dialed on the genetic side. But like, how do you get out of your brain? Like, okay, I do better with this versus this, or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no way that I wouldn't allow myself to just have to do that mental processing with every choice.
Well, it's not every choice, but also you would if you actually felt better. Here's the thing. Most people make sacrifices for things that don't get results and they're like, fuck this. I literally just had a client, very sulfur sensitive. She literally emailed me 2 days after we met. She didn't even get her supplements yet. I told her to watch the sulfur food. She was eating a lot of garlic. She was on garlic pills for detox. She literally said, I'm literally crying writing this right now. My tinnitus is gone that I've had for 35 years.
Oh my gosh.
Because guess what? What is tinnitus linked to? It's linked to high histamine. Mm-hmm. High sulfur releases histamine. So you see here, you know, it may sound like a lot, but my job is to make it more simple for you. But again, too, once most people I work with, they're like, I have brain fog all the time. Okay. I can't tell you, listen to your body. Your body's always like, fuck you, brain fog. So there's no contrast to be able to tell what's making it worse. But once, and this is why I do like supplements starting out, get these things, get the histamine down, get the sulfur down, get yourself feeling better. You're not going to have to take everything for the rest of your life. Certain things based on the genes, I think people should take every day forever. Breaks occasionally, but let's get you feeling better. Then if you start pulling something back and you eat a meal, you feel worse, go to your phone, type in what you ate. I'll guarantee you with extreme confidence, it's going to be high histamine or high salt, whatever you were sensitive to. Then you know. Oh, what do you know? You're going to – it's like, you know when you got too drunk on that type of alcohol, like when you were younger and like you can't drink it anymore? Like it's just like that's kind of what it can be like with some of these foods, because you realize I get brain fog from that. I don't feel good on that. That's going to – really sink into your brain. So again, it may seem like I wouldn't want to do all that, but if you literally feel and can think better than you ever have in your life before, you're going to be like, there's a reason why I fly and travel with all these supplements and powders, because I feel so good. And then not taking them, I feel worse. And that being said, I'm actually taking the least number of supplements I've ever taken in my life right now. I don't take that many. I mean, most of my clients take a lot more supplements than I do. It's just now I've honed into my things. I'm not eating foods that are raising my histamine, causing inflammation. So I don't need all the anti-inflammatories. I took the curcumin back in the day. I felt great on it. But then I started realizing, all right, I'm taking an anti-inflammatory herb. And if I take ibuprofen, I think better. Therefore, I'm inflamed. What's causing the inflammation? That was years ago. But nowadays, normally, I'm not cutting through that inflammation, the dense layer of inflammation and fog. I don't need as much. Mm-hmm. And then when I do get thrown off, I can notice it easier and identify what was the reason. There's always a cellular cause and effect.
Interesting. Yeah. I definitely think, like you're saying, like the holistic perspective and the interworking of a lot of modalities is really important. And the inner working of your lifestyle, your decisions, the way that you, where you live, you know, your movement levels, your foods and things like that. The foundation does seem to just bring me back to, like, there's something to this genetics piece because we're physical beings. Like, this is our physical reality that we have to contend with. And taking something like a supplement is creating a physical biochemical change that is optimizing, again, this physical body that we're still contained in. And so, like, there's no denial that that is important. I was just like, when you were talking about, you know, that, like, didn't alcohol make you sick? And then you just remembered, and then you just constantly avoided it. You know, the way that my husband looks at his health is much more in that viewpoint of like, oh, I don't feel well. Oh, I feel inflamed. What was the last thing I ate? What was the last supplement that I took? Whereas I'm always like, how could you possibly distill the way that you feel to the last meal that you ate? What if the meal that you ate on Monday is affecting you today? Like, that's so, it's trying to like zero in and find an answer to something that I just feel like at this point, because there's so much information, how do we know that we have an answer to like anything?
Well, that's my mission statement. There is way too much information overload. And my job is to help figure out what information should you, specifically you, be paying attention to. Because eat more meat, eat less meat, it causes cancer. It has all these nutrients. Like, how do you really know what makes more or less sense for you? Take this supplement for your histamine. Don't take this. Do that. My job is to add the level of nuance of what makes more or less sense for you. And regarding your husband, I see both sides. And also, if that pattern repeats itself too, then you could check that as well. Like, for example, I'm sulfur sensitive, and that means onions can throw me off. We got a meal prep company recently just to save time on cooking. And one of the meals was like steak, white rice, some onions, and like grilled pineapple. And I'm like, you know what? I know I don't do well with onions. I'm going to try without that molybdenum. I'm going to raw dog it. I'm going to see how I feel because I want to know for myself.
Have this onion.
I want to know for myself. Will this dosage of this brand of onions they have, how will it affect me? And what do you know? I ate that. I went on a podcast. It was very minor, a very slight, slight twinge of a headache, slight. And then that day, later in the day, I noticed myself feeling a little too revved up. Again, do I have blood histamine test to show this? No, but histamine is an excitatory neurotransmitter. It makes you release adrenaline. They prescribe antihistamines for anxiety and sleep medications. So I'm connecting the dots. I remembered, oh shit, that little headache went away, but I feel a little more revved up, the onion. And now again, to go one step further though, what else can affect sulfur sensitivity? Mercury toxicity. They're both thiols. So my mom's actually detoxing from heavy metals. We got her HTMA back. I'm getting one done too because I'm able to say I have a lot of sulfur mutations, but I was in my mom. She ate a lot of seafood. I think I may have heavy metals too. So I could have both of these exclusively, because the fact that I get a little headache off a tiny splash of onions, it does seem a little ridiculous. And I can admit that. You know what I mean? But I'm still not letting go of the genetics are a factor, but I'm also looking into other options because I'm open-minded. I have no problem admitting when I don't know something or when a new factor comes into play, because I'm truly interested in the truth, not in being right. And that's what a scientist is supposed to be about.
So awesome. That was a really good. And I believe you too, because I can feel your authenticity. And I think that, like,
I couldn't live any other way, man. Like, I don't get how some of these charlatans there even do it and they could convince themselves of that, because it would literally eat me alive. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, because I think I saw on one of your podcasts recently, because a lot of people are talking about genetics, epigenetics, peptides, all those things. You were talking about the practitioner that was working on Dana White.
Yeah, Gary Brecka. Oh, yeah.
So I mean, it's a little gossipy, but just what's the difference in what you two are doing? Like, if you kind of like just help people to understand better what you're doing versus what a lot of other people are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of mentioned initially the pharmacology background. What agents do we use? That's massively important. You could talk about what the genes mean, what the mutations matter for. If you're using something that helps that gene but harms two others, like, that's going to be a big issue. But here's the thing, you know, I stayed quiet about Gary Brecka for a while, but I've had many people find me after working with him, even though they don't actually work with him directly. So I don't like bad mouthing people, but considering people's health are at stake, you know, all I'm going to say is that it's very, very obvious. Grant Cardone is a massive business mogul. He owns 10X Health. He's pumping millions upon millions of dollars into this for advertising, getting big names like Dana White, like Steve Harvey to advertise. Gary's been debunked. He even got on Joe Rogan. That goes to show how much money and just clout will get you places, which is mind-blowing. He's been debunked by so many actual science. He has a bachelor's in biology. And he talks very matter of fact. He's a wizard salesman, how he words things. He's been debunked saying things like, oh yeah, MTHFR affects thyroid hormone activation. That is unequivocally false. So many, he'll reference studies that don't actually exist. So very obvious to me, a charlatan. Now,
well, is he looking at a similar test that you're looking at?
He looks at 5 methylation genes and tells you that's going to help your health. So versus the several hundred, he's charging $500 for 5 genes. I've seen the reports. People have worked with me and said, I got no support. I don't know what to do with this. I look at it. It's literally, literally laughable. If he's charging $500 for that, I should be charging $10,000-$20,000 for what I'm doing. Let me just leave it at that. Yeah. And there's no, it's here's your report, buy our supplements, 3 different supplement recommendations, here you go, no meeting with a doctor, none of that. Mm-hmm. So
it's just lacking. What you're saying is, like, this is someone who's trying to, like, scale this business model of genetics.
He's looking to make money. He's also selling, he's trying to sell helicopter rides on things. I don't know what that has to do with health. If you pay $20,000, you get to go on a helicopter ride with Gary, which I really don't understand that. You know, I'm pretty sure his superhuman package is $135,000. You get the sauna, you get the cold plunge for your house, you get all these things. So it's not about the genetics. It's about selling something to people. And I'm not saying that he hasn't helped a single person ever. Sure. Because if someone has MTHFR mutations, you give them methylfolate, they could feel better. Now, is that the end of their healing journey? Not even close. I'm going to be looking at other things, like facets.
I never felt significantly better. Like, even though I had those 2 mutations confirmed, like, I didn't feel significantly different or better. That wasn't enough information to, like, make a change in me. Like, I'll just say that.
Yeah. And, you know, because it is more complex than that. So, it really is. Again, that's the example of business people that hired someone that can talk about science confidently to sell things that he doesn't have to be involved in whatsoever, and saying whatever he needs to say to drive controversy. I mean, he went from nothing to 1 million followers in less than a year because everything sounds so wild and too good to be true, because a lot of it is, but it's woven with facts and things like don't eat processed garbage. So people that aren't educated latch on to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And then he has Dana White as a spokesperson as well.
I wonder how much they paid him for that.
But he looks a lot better.
Yeah. And that, but what, just because he, you think
that's, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm saying, I wonder.
It's a good sales tactic.
Oh, well, yeah. But again, too, it depends what other peptides is he on? What was the monthly burn rate for his protocol? So these are the things people aren't thinking of. Like,
meaning, like how much money was he spending for his
monthly? Oh, I'm pretty sure the Dana White protocol was like six-figure protocol. That's what they're selling. So that's my point. It's like, sure, you load someone enough up with enough things. You know, I'm not saying that they didn't make Dana White healthier. My point being is that acting as if the way you're – to me – all right, let me put it this way. Integrity is zero or one. It's yes or no. It's like being pregnant. You are or you aren't. And it's one thing when, let's just say, if he were to gotten called out by other PhD, but not other, he's not even a PhD. He's not even a doctor at all. So he got called out for misinformation. Clearly he saw it. It's all over the internet. Millions of views. If he was had integrity, he would have came out and said, hey guys, you know what? I'm not a doctor. I never claimed to be. I was wrong about this. But guess what? He's been on several other podcasts saying the same exact line, even though it's been debunked. So to me, this isn't an instance you throw out the baby with the bathwater. Because if he's willing to lie about that and keep lying about it, even though he knows it's misinformation, that's clearly a sales tactic. And if he's willing to do that, what else is he willing to do?
And so is he lying about it because he's selling an associated supplement to that claim?
Possibly. I think he's lying so he can sound very, and he can make it sound as bombastic as possible to get the most views, to get the most business. And listen, if you're pulling in probably millions a month, hire a doctor to just fact check what you say before you say it. But no.
Or just hire a doctor to lead what you're
sure there's doctors involved with, I'm sure there's some doctors involved with that. But my point being is, again, why don't you, again, you're not hiring someone to make sure what you're saying is right because you don't care about being right. You care about sounding like brand new information. So everyone thinks you have the answers. So everyone buys your kit. They buy your helicopter ride. They buy your at-home cold plunge. They buy your like vibrating thing to melt fat cells away.
Yeah.
Very obvious from my point of view. And I've seen a lot of people come to me after working with him like, holy shit, this is
real
how it should be, not just two-page report. Here you go, give it to me.
That's a new soul characteristic. Okay, he's just, it's maybe it's his first time here.
Elaborate on that.
I mean, it was kind of a joke, but just,
well, I'm sure we're learning a little something. Like, what do you mean by new soul, old soul? Like, you mean like money grabbing type
I mean that, you know, it takes a lot to have a foundation of integrity in everything that you do. Mm-hmm. I know that you actually just said it's a yes or no, it's a pregnant, you're not. But in actuality, I think through this quite a bit. And I've, you know, just in my 30s, I would say I've like reached this pivotal point of, oh, is this word that I'm using in integrity as part of this sentence in this conversation? Like, so there's such nuance. Like, is my showing up to this in integrity of what I, of the way that I actually feel or my belief system? Being authentic, but it's so nuanced because It's in every moment. It's in every interaction. It's in every word. It's in every single thing that a choice comes up for you to be on behalf of, to act on behalf of your authenticity and truth and integrity, or, you know, something that maybe isn't as nefarious, like maybe just to make someone else happy or to make someone not feel uncomfortable or to do what you think you're supposed to be doing. Right. So it's actually a daily practice, I think. a moment-to-moment practice to actually live in integrity and in authenticity. And
it's definitely harder at times, for sure.
Surely, yeah. You know, and like I think back to when I first opened my business 10 years ago. You know, I am trying so hard. I want to help so many people. But I don't necessarily know what's right or know what's right for everyone. You know, I have a food business, a juice wellness shop. But I was in a place where I, you know, everyone should have this. Everyone should have that. Everyone should, you just try this. You know, like, I have no idea. So am I acting out of integrity? No, but do I want my business to survive? Yes. Like, and now I'm in a place where I recognize, like, did that marketing piece like have sort of like an aspect of fear associated with it? Like, was I trying to like get people to feel like they had to do this or else?
I hate the fear mongering. It's human psychology sucks, honestly. How much more that penetrates, because that's what rules king nowadays. And yeah, it's very frustrating.
Well, I think it's amazing that you do formats like this, because I think, and for me as well, and this is what I'm committing to, is I want to give people an opportunity to interact with options and opportunities and perspectives that provide a feeling of hope, positivity, curiosity, and let them choose from there. Like, empower people to not feel like they have to make choices from a place of fear, but give more options for them to choose out of love and curiosity and fun and joy and all those things.
I love that.
So that's my mission for this year.
Love that.
My vision. But let me think if there's anything lingering that I wanted to ask you about, because I had a ton of questions and I could probably talk to you for a very long time. Yes. Love your accent, by the way. I didn't get to compliment it yet.
Oh, thank you.
Is it Boston?
Long Island.
Long Island.
Long Island. I'm walking my dog to get a coffee. Yep.
Was that insulting that I said Boston?
I don't care. Whatever. Definitely, they're definitely different. So definitely different, but I'm not insulted at all. It's all good.
Oh, this is something I wanted to ask you about. So I'm still breastfeeding. My daughter is 18 months, which, by the way, like, if you ever feel like doing a research study on that, that'd be great, because no one else does. No one wants to touch a lactating woman or a pregnant woman with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I work with lactating women. You know, it just depends on, you know, which nutrients, you know. Like, some of the things I really like utilizing, lithium orotate. I love using CBD. Those are two things that realistically I do think in low doses they would be fine. But at the same point,
take that. I'm not afraid of that.
Yeah. Well, like, even after pregnancy as well. You know what I mean? But like, certain things, you know, you want to be mindful of course. But I work with all different types of people. I worked with my youngest client was 3 months old. My oldest is probably 90 something, you know, pregnant, lactating, you know, breastfeeding. What, did I really say lactating instead of breastfeeding? Same thing, I guess, but.
Yeah, that's true. Breastfeeding, lactating, I don't know.
Well, I guess you could be lactating, but not breastfeeding technically,
right? You could be lactating.
I guess that's pumping technically, or no? Is pumping considered lactating? I would think lactating would kind of be just passively, right? Like, I think pumping would be like forced involuntary lactation.
I pumped twice, like in 18 months. So I don't have a lot of experience with that.
Gotcha. What dictates that? Like, my cousin like pumped like all the time. Now, is that, I'm new to all this. I don't have any time. Kids. So
you don't know until you literally are doing it. Because when I was pregnant,
sucking it out with velocity makes it over with quicker versus having to
nurse.
It could be longer, or
it means that basically, if you're breastfeeding on demand, like basically what I've done with my daughter for 18 months, it means that essentially you have to be around your child the majority of the time, all the time.
Gotcha.
So like the longest I have been without her has maybe been like 4 hours.
Wow.
And if you've 4 or 5 hours, and if you had told me that when I was pregnant, I would have been like, I'm going to be attached to this being for literally every moment. And it's like, you know, it does naturally just become what our life is. And I wouldn't have given up this experience for the world. As well, there's a lot of research that her saliva communicates at the source of breastfeeding to tell my body what to make more of for her. Mm. So that
fascinating.
So that is not possible if you're pumping. And it's not to make someone who's pumping feel guilty, because if someone has to go to work for 8 hours a day.
It's all pros versus cons. Everyone's no judgment at all. Yeah, but we could still discuss again. You want to try to stay as close to nature as you can. You know, it just depends again, what you consider natural and unnatural.
Yeah, it goes back to the beginning of our conversation. Like, could we hack our way out of this? Because yes, it is a very challenging thing, especially as a working person, as like, you know. But at the same time, like, so is parenting. Mm-hmm. And like, can we actually like hack our way out of not spending time with our child and have a child that is well balanced and, you know, has empathy and all those things? I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. And like, do we want to do that? And to what extent? I don't know. But my point in bringing that up was, you know, there's a lot of research about what happens to someone when they're pregnant, a woman when they're pregnant, and breastfeeding in terms of like the reduction of nutrients and vitamins and all those things. And so again, there isn't a lot of research.
You're saying because you're concentrated in breast milk, you lose them? Am I understanding that correctly?
Through pregnancy and through like creating, through feeding.
I mean, creating life is very metabolically nutrient demanding, you know? So it definitely makes
sense. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You're just saying it better. So, you know, there's very little advice, especially in extended breastfeeding, which like, you know, it's recommended that you breastfeed for 2 years. Most people in America that do breastfeed might breastfeed like for 3 months, maybe, because it's just, it's challenging.
I mean, when you gotta have a dual income just to survive in this crazy capitalistic world.
It's all crazy. It's freaking nuts. But what my question was, like, when I had written down some of the things I wanted to talk to you about, is, you know, there's a lot that needs to be replenished during this time, after this time. And do you think that it would be super important to have like that genetic blueprint on top of that? Or like, you know, is there some sort of foundational, okay, you know, in terms of like the nutrients that are used, you can be pretty safe in replenishing in this way, whether like through food or like some basic supplements? No, you wouldn't say that, right? Like, based on,
can you reword that again? You're so saying, like, do you genetically personalize what the mother gets?
No, I'm saying, could you? I'm basically asking you to do what you said that you don't do, which is to give like a blanket suggestion as to how to replenish.
Oh, I
after
see.
After you've been through a process like pregnancy or breastfeeding for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think two really big powerhouses that have a lot of good data for breastfeeding are omega-3s and phosphatidylcholine. Choline itself, very important for brain cell development. So I think those are two that are really, really important. And again, you also got to think, the things that are most likely to be depleted are probably the things that you're most likely to not absorb as well genetically. You know what I mean? So, of course, I bring it back around to the genetics. But again, you see what I'm saying? If you have all tanks for different nutrients in your body, you're depleting them because you're concentrating them in breast milk. The ones that you don't absorb as well genetically are most likely going to be the ones you run out quickly if you're not supplementing.
That's a great point.
And then also, too, you have, obviously, that child will be half you. So that means your child, it can be twofold. Your child also doesn't absorb it quite as well.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I mean, some crazy like boutique, you know, you analyze the breast milk, look at the genetics and like just like spike it with all the right different, because I've worked with people that are breastfeeding, or I've worked with young children that are being breastfed, and we'll actually add the nutrients to the breast milk. So they can't breastfeed for that, but they'll pump, and then we'll give the right dosages of specific nutrients into the breast milk just to deliver it in that way. There's so much other cofactors that help with, you know, the bioaccumulation and the absorption, you know, and that soothing on the GI tract and all these things. So I had done that occasionally with some clients when, you know, the child's born with, you know, head to toe eczema. We can't figure out why, these different things. Or the child, you know. So when I call these my holistic mutations, they're regular gene mutations. But then you have what I like to call clinical mutations. Have you heard of the BRCA gene?
No.
So the BRCA gene is one of the most discussed genes for breast cancer, cervical cancer, ovarian cancer.
Oh, like, okay. BRAC.
BRCA. Yeah. Like Angelina Jolie got a double mastectomy because her mom has it. She had it. She's just like, chop them off. I don't even want to deal with it or risk it at all.
Yeah.
That's what we call a clinical mutation. I don't comment on those. You know, I don't have a master's in genetic consulting. So legally, you need a certain license to be able to comment on people's bone. These are ones that are rarer that are like, wow, you have a much higher risk for cancer. I focus on all the other controllables. Like the mutations I focus on are also linked to cancer and Alzheimer's.
Interesting.
But so I've worked with people, children.
Wait, can we just clarify this? Okay, so sure. You're saying that there are clinical mutations that you don't comment on, but there all the other mutations can contribute to certain illnesses.
It depends how you
look at
it.
So are you just saying like a certain body of – like a certain governing body has made it so that you shouldn't or can't, or do you feel like you can't?
So the government, like the old company I used to work at, I was doing cancer screenings for cancer risk, hereditary cancer risk. Guess what was on there? MTHFR was on there. So, you know, everything that I do is, quote, for educational purposes, because it's not meant to diagnose or cure any disease. But when you read between the lines, low vitamin D, for example, easy example for everyone to wrap their head around, is linked to virtually every single type of cancer. So if you look further, that mutation that I told you that makes me not make vitamin D in my skin as well, what do you know? That exact mutation that I have, that most of my clients have, is linked to a higher risk for cancers and neurodegeneration and all these things. So that's why I'm saying if we support those now, I don't have data. I can't prove this right now. My personal belief is making you feel better today is going to reduce your disease risk in the future, because the reason why you feel shitty right now is the same reason why you're going to get disease. Mm-hmm. That brain fog, the bloating, all these things that we accept as normal and pop Advil for, these are the check engine lights of our cells screaming out for help. And of course, there's a genetic component. There's also other components as well, but that's what real preventative medicine is about. So you need – I looked into being a genetic consultant, counselor, but the PhD is actually a lot more training. So I was like overqualified for that. But then I realized they have to stick to a perfect script, like word by word, what they say. And I'm like, I'm way too much of like a creative thinker. Like I don't want to do any, like, so that's why I figured out doing this, like 23andMe, it's not clinical grade sequencing, 99.97% accurate. But if they, I'm trying to think how to word this. So if you're going to – people will ask me, can this check cancer genes? And I tell them, I could look to see if you have the mutation, but I don't feel comfortable giving that to you. You should go to an actual an oncologist that will then sequence it. The results should be identical, but just the legality-wise and the red tape. And again, though, why are those genes considered clinical? They're studied a lot more. Why are they studied a lot more? Because they make drugs that target it. So you see, it all comes back to what drugs they can patent to make the money for the surgery.
Sure.
They have no interest in finding a mutation on their panel that means you need more vitamin D. Exactly. So, and a lot of those mutations, it's, oh, you have a higher risk for cancer. Not every mutation is actionable. Not every mutation has a supplement for it. A lot of these companies, not even the clinical ones, even a lot of these, you know, other companies that are kind of more similar to what I do, a lot of the mutations are, oh, you have an increased risk for this. Who fucking cares? I want to tell you what's in your control. Like, I don't want to just tell you an informative thing. I want it to all be actionable to put all the power into your hands. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to waste time telling you, oh, you don't have this. I don't need to flex on you how many genes I check to try and inflate the value. I'm going to talk to you strictly about the most important things, no fluff, no BS, what is actionable that we could support through natural means, because I don't want to waste your time and do that and waste my time just to fluff it up to say, oh, look how many genes. No. On the back end, there's millions of genes being checked. I'm going to summarize that for you. And that's why these hour-long meetings can change people's lives, because there's been so much vetting and condensing and consolidating and concentrating and distilling it down to what's going to move the needle the most for you. Of course, there's all this other stuff that can move the needle for you that I can't discuss in an hour. And again, where do you draw the line? But yeah. Back, does that make sense? The clinical, I call them totally. Holistic mutations, yeah. But
and I guess
it's not like it's a hippie woo-woo thing. People try to act like, you know, I say holistic, people think, like, I remember I used to start some of my reels with, I'm a holistic pharmacologist. And you know what I got? What a fucking quack. Get a real degree. Not real. And I'm just like, I have a PhD, you know what I mean? So I don't start with that intro anymore, you know, because like Facebook ate me alive with that. I don't give a shit. But at the same point, I'm just like, no, all right. I'm a PhD scientist. That goes over a lot better with people, you know?
So, yes. I also, you know, in terms of like, you know, what do people do with that information? I always tell people, like, are you going to a practitioner who's going to provide you with information that makes you feel good and excited? Do you feel good and excited about someone? You know, you can look at your practice and know, like, okay, I'm going to get some targeted supplements, targeted nutraceuticals. I'm going to get maybe some food suggestions. And like, does that make me feel excited? If I go to an oncologist, you only have two options of what they're going to give you.
Either you're pregnant or you're not, but it's either you have cancer or you don't. Yep.
Or like, yeah. And
very binary.
If yes, like we only do, again, two things. Like, are you okay with that? And I'm not saying that people shouldn't see doctors and whatever. Like, that's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, if you're
doctors in a world. Once you're past the point of no return, you know, and I'm as holistic as they come, but my PhD thesis was on breast cancer. So I actually am a cancer biologist by training. So here's the thing. Once you already have cancer, the current lines of treatments do work. That being said, though, people can – let me think how to word this. So cancer are your own cells that mutate, that don't get pruned. They should be destroyed. They don't. They keep getting more and more mutations. They get superpowers. The cell will grow nonstop. Then eventually, oh no, this cancer cells can now chew through your collagen. So they metastasize. They gain these superpowers. So they're looking at your mutations. Even in one tumor, let's just say you and I both have the exact same type of subtype of lung cancer. Our tumors can each have dozens of different mini populations of cells that imagine they evolved and they mutated into different forms. So that's why cancer is so hard to treat. You hit them with a drug. You kill 95% of them. You go into remission. I actually had a consult call today, a discovery call with someone that just has had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And she said, I asked her, she's in remission. She's like, they don't use remission anymore. They use no longer detectable. And honestly, that's a much better term, because you need to have a tumor be billions of cells big to come up on an ultrasound. A cell is tiny. So you killed 90%+ of the cancer cells. The few that are left, guess what? Why didn't they die? Because they're the little subtype that was resistant. And then cancer takes a long time to grow, 10+ years. Then it comes back after a few years. Since you already started from some of them there, now it's resistant. So that's remission doesn't mean it's gone. You didn't re-get cancer when the remission comes back. It grew beyond above the level of detection, the threshold for technology. But the company I used to work at, again, they're sequencing your cancer cells. They'll sequence your healthy cells to figure out your risk, but they also sequence your cancer once it's formed to figure out, okay, this receptor is mutated. We're going to block that receptor with this drug. That drug makes the most sense for you. Radiation makes more sense based on these genes. But A, you can only sequence so much of the tumor. You may not get the right parts. But also, this is what made me think. I'm like, this is ass fucking backwards. Don't get me wrong. You need that. You need that medicine. We need that. Like, that's a good thing to invest in. But why? And this is what led me to leave that company and start mine. Why are we sequencing our healthy cells, figuring out what's putting them at risk to become cancer in the first place?
Or again, to not be able to eliminate the cancer.
Say that again.
Or like you said, we should be sequencing our cells for their optimal health, but also we should be, you know, optimizing them to be able to deal with rogue cells or cancer cells.
And it's all one and the same. It's connected together, you know? So yeah, and again, we need that. We absolutely need that, because don't come to me. I have had clients that come with me and say, I currently have cancer. Can you help me? And I tell them, cancer, you have to be delicate, because if I'm supplementing for your healthy cells, how can I be sure I'm not helping the cancer cells more than I'm helping your healthy cells? That being said, I do think overall it's a net benefit. But again, living in supreme authenticity, I told this woman today, I'm just being totally honest. I think I can help you, but I couldn't live with myself not letting you know. We don't know. Like, they've shown that glutathione can help cancer grow more if it's already there. Like, that's been shown. So I told her this, and she told me, I'm already taking 50 supplements. I don't know what's doing what. I'm like, oh shit. Well, in that case, like, I'm open to working with you, but I don't want to take your money just for a new client. I get that. Bless you.
Thank you.
So she's okay with doing that. I personally think it's a net benefit, but it's kind of the Wild West there. But so that's kind of, once you currently have cancer, it's a different ball game. But most of them, they feel horrible. I work with them. They feel a lot better. Right now, I don't have the wherewithal to do follow-up. Did the tumor shrink? You know, that type. Eventually, that's the end game, you know, to have the data to back that up. But similar, when I work with people with autism or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's disease, they feel better. Do I have brain scans to show that they regrew the dopamine neurons in their brain for Parkinson's? I don't. They stop shaking as much. They're off a lot of their meds. They sleep better. They feel better. That's good enough for me, you know? I mean, not good enough for mass adoption, but I gave up on my dream being bright-eyed and bushy-tailed fresh out of my PhD that this is going to be in every doctor's office across the world, across the country. They don't give a fuck. If I try to push for that, they're probably going to kill me, honestly. So my goal now is to have a network of holistic practitioners that want to personalize their information. And that's more than good enough for me.
We're never going to take down
the conventional medicine. The world would have to collapse to literal ash and nothingness in order for that vice grip of the politicians to the medicine, to all that stuff there, to the big food companies. It'd have to literally go down to ash. And at that point, like, I think we got bigger problems at that point, because literally that's going to be the last thing to go in society in America. Sad reality.
Well, I'm so thankful that we have you and we have your information, and we're in a time where, you know, it's really hard to cut through the noise. It's really hard to see through media, but you're shining your light and you're doing it in such a beautiful and authentic way. And you're providing such a service just by being who you are and just by continuing your own curiosities. And it's all like from a place of love, and that's so silly to in the way that it sounds, but I know that that is why you're doing what you're doing. Love of self, love of interest, love of other people. And so I'm really happy that you shared your time with us and your talents, and I'm really excited for you, and we're definitely going to connect again soon.
Because there
are so many things and so many topics that I wanted to talk about. Peptides, for example.
Honestly, I need to, again, you know, I don't know if I said this before, but again, no, I told you I'm working all the time. So once I get some free time back, I got to do like a hard week or two on peptides, because I know the basics, but like, you wouldn't want to have me come on talk about peptides right now, because I'm really not that well versed on them.
Okay.
Again, you know, regarding the peptides too, like, they definitely work. Again, though, they should be personalized to your body. And I do think nowadays, same thing with hormone injections. I've gotten people off of hormones, figuring out why their body's not making them as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not against it. They can help a lot of people, but I think it's skipping the fact. I am really about masterfully doing the foundational, like, why are you going on peptides for autoimmunity if your vitamin D pathway is shot and it's not working right?
Yes.
Like, that should be the more found. But nowadays, it's the new flashy thing. Shoot this up. It's not a drug. Go and get it, whatever, for your testosterone. It's not testosterone, but you make – and I'm like, what else regulates testosterone? Methylation, vitamin D. Maybe your body is hardwired to not synthesize DHEA as well. That's the precursor to testosterone. I've gotten people off of testosterone onto a DHEA. $10 a month, one little pill, no fuss, no doctor, no prescription. And that's all they need, because for them, their low testosterone was the missing precursor. Some people have a harder time actually making testosterone. If that gene that makes testosterone doesn't work as well, well, guess what? Testosterone therapy makes sense for you. But you see, again, with the peptides, people kind of jump to that. So not to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, far from a peptide expert, but I am interested in them for sure. And yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as a fellow reverse engineer, it does make the most sense. Like, if we're looking at genes as the foundation of our biology, it makes the most sense to sort that before doing.
And of course,
else.
Optimizing sleep, lowering, you know what I mean? If you're sleeping like crap, no biohack is going to, you know, how many people are just have horrible sleep hygiene and they just go on a testosterone shot to compensate? You know, the body's always listening.
We need to talk about that too.
Okay.
Again, because the breastfeeding thing, this is like, I mean,
I know the time of day should, influences what's in the breast milk too, which is another thing with pumping. That's a factor too.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, pretty sure my cousin at least did AM and PM pump. So she wasn't mixing them up, you know?
But my point in saying, like, everyone is like, optimize your sleep. If you sleep like shit, you're going to feel like shit. Let me just tell you, before I got pregnant, if I was woken up in the middle of the night, if I had less than 8 hours of sleep, I felt like I was hungover for the entire next day. Since having my baby, I've not slept. I wake up, and maybe this doesn't affect my sleep, the fact that I wake up to feed her, but she's slept in my bed for 18 months. Also, during pregnancy, you wake up so much. I've never felt better. Like, am I tired? Yes, but I'm not.
I mean, that could just be hungover. In a connection, like mother and child, you know, that oxytocin signaling spikes up. But even just the change that I would bet, if you think evolutionarily, why wouldn't the system of nature, like, make sure it rewards you for doing your job and breastfeeding? But the nature would want you to be resistant to the negative health effects of intermittent sleep because you're doing it for the betterment of your offspring.
But it still feels like a pain in the ass during the day times. Like, okay, you have her on one boob and then her fingers and nails are on the other boob. Like, it's torturous. Like, think of torture, and that's what happens during.
Now I gotta ask, like, do you like, now is it normal to like switch breasts too, or is it like kind of like
have to go? She knows, and like she will. She goes back and forth like they're different flavors. She's like vanilla chocolate, vanilla chocolate. Yeah. I'm like, and my husband is always just like looking at her, and it changes the way that they feel and all these things. Like, we have to have a separate conversation about breastfeeding and pregnancy and stuff, because again, no one talks about it, especially like in the way that I do it, but. But yeah, so many things, Tyler. We really could go on forever.
We could.
Yes. And I thank you for all of your time that you've given me thus far. Third time was the charm. Thank you for rescheduling and making it easy. But yeah, let's touch base again. Do the peptides course, because I want to hear your perspective on like some peptides and things like that.
Awesome. And yeah, real quick too, pick a discount code. I want to give anyone listening like $100 off working with me.
For sure.
So you let me know.
Sheena,
I'll write it down real quick.
Easiest.
Sheena, okay.
Sheena.
So you guys, Sheena on my website, that'll do $100 off.
Nice.
Right now, all I do are the one-on-ones, but I'm looking forward to the future to having a whole different suite of, you know, this mini workshop, this, that, and just being able to distill as much useful information to you all. Hope you guys all learn something. At Dr. Tyler Panzer on Instagram.
Yeah.
www.drtylerpanzer.com. You know, just getting started with all this stuff and got to figure out how to share this unique perspective. And again, I'll never be claiming this is the only way, but I know deep in my soul, without a doubt, that this is a way that people really aren't considering, that bare minimum can make you feel minorly but noticeably better, and on the high end can literally change your life in the course of a few days.
So amazing. Thank you, Tyler. We'll link the code. It'll be Sheena, and we'll also link your website and all of your things too.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much.